Edition of Unfiltered, part of the Santa Mirta Podcast Network. I'm Ben, and I put the ass in compassionate here. If you're just tuning in for the first time, I write a weekly online column about real life in Santa Cruz, California, called The Weekly Dump. It's published every Thursday night over on www.santamirta.com. Go check it out if you're not familiar with it. So this week, in keeping things topical, I want to talk a bit about district elections. District elections are a red-hot topic right now in Santa Cruz, as they should be. Many people blame the lack of them for the way the latest city council election turned out. Whether or not UCSC vote is overstated in terms of actual value to a candidate or not, a compelling argument could be made for the way Cronin Company manipulated the UCSC vote, and how the UCSC vote in particular manipulates the city vote. There are all kinds of conspiracy theories that could be floated about stuff in the past, but in the future, something Santa Cruz needs to seriously consider. And we seem to be doing that, thanks in large part to former Mayor David Terrazas, who basically was the showrunner for the new Citizens Task Force studying a change to district elections in the city of Santa Cruz, which I support. I mean, I support the group. So what exactly are district elections and why should I care, some of you are probably asking. That's a fair question to ask. And there's nothing I care about more than a well-informed voter. According to the National League of Cities, there are basically three types of constituencies for city councils. The first is known as at-large, which is what we currently have. All council members basically represent everyone in theory. The second is known as district, meaning voters live in voting districts and elect a council member to represent their district. This is how we elect the County Board of Supervisors. The third option is a combination of the first two. The local school board and port commissioners are local examples, I think, which use the combination method. So what are the pros and cons of each? Fans of the at-large method claim better impartiality of issues since each person represents the city as a whole. They also claim better candidates make themselves available from a bigger pool of available people. Those are fair arguments, I suppose. Critics feel that minorities in the community have the potential to be misrepresented or underrepresented. About two-thirds of all U.S. cities use an at-large system or a combination system. Fans of district elections claim it levels the playing field for minority candidates. Critics are concerned that with district elections, council members will prioritize their district over the good of the city overall. Lots of stuff to consider. Lots of hypotheticals. Lots of rhetoric. What we do know is we use all three methods locally, with varying degrees of success. We've been electing our Board of Supervisors under district voting, as long as I know. So to say district voting is bad, scary, won't work here, just doesn't pass the sniff test for me. It already works here, and it's still working. We use it. So how do I feel about district elections? I have mixed feelings, and if I had my choice, I would probably pick a combined or mixed system of at-large and district representatives. My suggestion would be, since we currently have 7 city council members, my preference would be to have 5 district council members and 2 at-large members. Split the city into 5 districts. Something like downtown, UCSC, Upper West Side, East Side, Lower Ocean Beach Flats, just off the top of my head. And then you could alternate election cycles so that the at-large seats are elected in alternating cycles. It would provide a good mix of both systems. It would help neuter the UCSC effect. It would also help reduce concerns over district special interest voting with at least two at-large candidates representing the city's overall best interests. And it would reduce the corruptive power and influence of what I like to refer to as the machine on a local level. We probably wouldn't be seeing candidates spending upwards of $50,000 in special interest money and lose. It kind of levels the playing field. It doesn't flatten it. At-large candidates may still attract special interest money, but district reps will inevitably run smaller campaigns and be more focused on neighborhood issues. Over on the Santa Muerta website, I've had a poll running for the past few months, and voters overwhelmingly support district elections. Last time I checked, it was 309-73 in favor of district elections. Go check it out and cast your vote if you haven't already. So this week, I've also got a special guest on the show. My buddy Big Joe is going to talk about keeping it real. His last name's not Friday, but he talks like him. Take it away, Big J.
Good evening, Santa Cruz. In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. Sometimes both law and order need to collaborate. The story you're about to hear is true. I haven't changed any names, and nobody's innocent. My name's Big Joe, and tonight we begin with a backstory. The year was 2012. It was December, at a meeting of the City Council's Public Safety Subcommittee. Present were council members Don Lane and a rookie named David Terrazas, and the house was packed. A presentation over public safety concerns in the city of Santa Cruz led to over 30 members of the public commenting. After everyone had their time to speak, Don Lane moved a motion to have staff create a citizen-driven public safety task force. Terrazas seconded, both said aye, and bam, the Public Safety Citizen Task Force was born. The task force was chosen in the spring of 2013, and after an exhaustive, thorough process lasting about 6 months, presented their findings and recommendations to the City Council by way of a special meeting in early December of that year. The task force chairperson emphasized collaboration throughout the presentation as the key to improving community well-being in the downtown areas and in the city in general. Collaboration between the city and county criminal justice agencies. Great report. Read it or reread it when you get a chance. The video for that December presentation is also available in the city's archives. At some period shortly after the task force presentation, Terrazas presented to the council a blueprint of sorts for a focused interagency program to address repeat low-level offenders. That report, titled the Downtown 100 Implementation Guide, chronicled a holistic prosecution project to reduce chronic offender crime in the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Where Terrazas dug that up, I have no idea, but DT was good at that kind of stuff. The Minneapolis report was 9 years in the making, and I'm sure their initial plan didn't survive first contact with the streets, but was refined over a 9-year period into an effective working model that could be shared. It was free. In a nutshell, the Minneapolis program was a targeted approach to addressing the top 100 serial offenders in that city, and it worked. A key element of this project, in addition to having all agencies working off the same sheet of music, was the implementation of a vertical prosecution model. Simply put, they established a set of ground rules and potential for potential participants, and these participants were given a choice. You either enter the program and willingly accept rehab, or you face the maximum allowable punishment the law would allow for violating local ordinances and Minnesota state law. Classic carrot and stick. Those offenders who entered the program were required to abide by individualized terms of participation, and any slip-ups would see them in front of a dedicated team of courtroom officers every single time. The same judge, the same prosecuting attorney, the same defense attorney, and the same probation officer. Every ingredient in this program was integral to its overall success.
Thanks for that terrific research and background, Joe. Joe has a Facebook page and a website called Santa Cruz Keeping It Real. And he does a good job, not only lifting the veil, but blowing the roof off stuff related to the city and county and public safety in Santa Cruz. And he doesn't just talk the talk. He's an active SCPD volunteer out walking the streets daily, serving and helping his community. We'll get back to Joe in a minute. But first, let's enjoy a bit of Sunday Night Fog from CDK. We'll be right back after this break. Okay, we're back again with Big Joe, who's talking about collaboration among the city and county and how the Citizens Public Safety Task Force was formed. So you're saying, Joe?
The Minnesota Implementation Guide was adopted by the late Bob Lee, and the Santa Cruz version of the Downtown 100 began. It was termed DAP, or Downtown Accountability Program. A vertical prosecution model was established. Stakeholders were appointed to start up and monitor the program. Candidates were selected, and 5 months later, preliminary results were in. In 2014, at a September meeting of the City Council, a presentation on the DAP preliminary results was presented by District Attorney Jeff Rozelle. Bob Lee had passed away. Rozelle renamed the DAP the Bob Lee PACT Program, in honor of the program's founder and driving force behind the effort. PACT is an acronym used for Partnership for Accountability, Correction, and Treatment. He reported that while preliminary, the results were encouraging. SCPD Deputy Chief Rick Martinez reported that results were, quote, fantastic. Newly elected District 3 County Supervisor Ryan Coonerty also stated that the results were fantastic, in addition to pledging the use of his seat on the Board of Supervisors to close any bureaucratic loopholes that may arise. Things seemed to be rolling along. The improved vibe downtown was measurable. However, two integral elements to this program would see it in shambles over the next 4 years, despite the $1.2 million being pumped into it from the city coffers. The first was the missing in action status of the Santa Cruz County Probation Department. The Minneapolis downtown program used a dedicated probation officer to randomly, routinely contact program participants in the wild, so to speak. This officer also routinely went to the Hennepin County Jail to interview participants who had slipped up. He or she addressed behavioral triggers, suggested alternatives, and made necessary adjustments to better address each person's rehab efforts. Our county probation department, apart from donating a $30,000 initial seed money, noted in documents as in-kind contributions, which means no cash, never entered the program at all. The second element was the retirement of Sheriff Wowak in 2015 and the subsequent election of Jim Hart as county sheriff. While Sheriff Hart does have some success during his time in office, his short-sightedness regarding repeat offenders often come at the expense of the SCPD and their ability to keep the community safe. Mismanaging the jail population post-prison realignment is definitely on that list as well. The fallout was that both PACT and its sister program, SIP, the Serial Inebriate Program, would lose their carrot-stick consequences and thus all leverage for the program. Sheriff Hart began successful efforts to divert admitting PACT-SIP participants into jail, where they could be counseled by contracted service providers prior to release. And these participants were, and still are, either being taken to the sheriff's run recovery center or refused admittance into the main jail's booking desk at all. This was all spelled out in two reports contracted for and presented to the Board of Supervisors by a professor at the California State University at Monterey Bay. This CSUMB study, with 4 years plus of data to go on, said the single most contributing factor explaining the initial success of the DAP was that many, if not all, of the program participants were in jail at the time of this preliminary results in 2014. As in, not on the streets, as in not downtown, as in a cage. The report also stated that the three critical components to any potential success of these types of programs were the need for PACT SIT participants to be seen by program staff once arrested and prior to release from jail, the appointment of a dedicated probation officer, and the need for housing participants while enrolled in these programs. The report accepted by the BOS. And a few months later, PACT SIP fell under a new continuum of care umbrella now called the HOPES team. HOPES is an acronym for Homeless Outreach Proactive Engagement and Services. To be clear, both PACT and SIP still exist, but there's still no probation involvement, and the participants are still not being disqualified from admittance into the recovery center. Further, we seem to have lost the dedicated ADA as part of the vertical prosecution model, and the sheriff, with the blessing of the Board of Supervisors, has all but shut the intake doors to his jail for misdemeanor offenses. The program coordinator, Tina Scholl, has been missing in action for most of 2018, if not all, and there was zero leverage exerted from either Rochelle Naroyan or Cynthia Chase, the city reps on the HOPES Executive Committee, to correct these deficiencies. Why is all this important now? Because on November 20th, 2018, just 2 days before Thanksgiving, the County Health Services Agency tried to slip past the Board of Supervisors a bullshit fluff piece disguised as a status report. It was buried in a 676-page agenda packet and filed as a consent agenda item. Coonerty, in a rare moment of leadership, rejected the report and told the HSA to come back in January of this year with a clearer picture of the number of clients enrolled in HOPES, the number of citations and arrests for these individuals both 6 months prior to enrollment and 6 months after they were enrolled, and any other measures the staff would like to share with the board. Go get 'em, Ryan. The Board of Supervisors held a meeting on January 15, 2019, and only crickets were heard from the HOPES team. There's one more meeting scheduled for January. It's on the 29th. The agenda for that meeting is due to hit the streets on Friday the 25th. If Coonerty actually has a voice on the board, a revised status report should be in there. Find it. Read it. Employ your critical thinking skills. Submit letters to your county district supervisor. Express your opinion, one way or the other. Let them know you're watching.
Doce se oferece por instante, meus olhos encantam de novo. O teu olhar, este teu olhar, que me deixa entrar em ti, e ainda, e ainda, e ainda, e ainda.
So I really didn't talk at all in this week's dump about the recent city council meeting, mostly because I just can't bring myself to watch more than 5 minutes at a time before needing to change the channel. I did manage to catch a few fleeting moments, like the lunatic in the orange shirt at Oral Communications. I need to find a copy of his 2 minutes. The main discussion seemed to revolve around the new city council wanting to circumvent the will of the voters and shove some form of rent control down our throats, despite 65% of us telling them we don't want it. Is tone deaf a progressive trait? The place was packed with lots of people on both sides of the issue, lots of fear-mongering and rhetorical subjective evidence, and a lot of animosity around the idea of what's known as just cause evictions, which seriously limit or prohibit the landlord from controlling the use of their own property. In the end, the city council backed off plans to reinstate a temporary law prohibiting landlords from evicting tenants without just cause. I was pretty surprised and shocked by how this turned out. Pleasantly surprised and shocked, actually. Chris Croon has been steamrolling his new fabulous 4 majority on the city council, and it turns out the 4th might be more independent than he thought. Forget about Sandy the Other Brown, who's hard to take seriously even in her few lucid moments, but she's a loyal lackey to Croon. If he's Alex, she's his Dim. So Cummings noticeably switched positions and sides on this week's vote, saying his position was based on public concerns that the council and not the community was taking the lead on creating the temporary ordinance, referencing Measure M, which was community-driven. He actually recognized that both sides were willing to compromise to some degree, which is more than could be said of Crone, Brown, or Muffintop. That took guts and showed foresight, maturity, something the previously 3 mentioned they lacked. So coming up in the next weekly dump, Friday night around 11:30, there was a stabbing, or maybe it was a shooting, on Pacific Avenue, right in front of where the old Tampico Kitchen used to be next to the metro station. I say stabbing or shooting because I don't think we've definitively heard anything about it yet from SCPD or the local news media. But the big puddle of blood tells me, yeah, it actually happened. Someone suffered a pretty serious head injury and was flown over the hill to a trauma center. Another victim was also found nearby. They were driven by ambulance to a trauma center in San Jose after a second life flight would have taken too long to accommodate. As far as I know, nobody was caught or arrested, despite having a large police presence downtown searching for the suspect. They also apparently have strong witness descriptions and statements, as well as video from nearby businesses which captured the suspect walking away. They have all this, and meanwhile we have nothing. Can't help find the suspect if we don't even know anything happened. We invite bad behavior. In many ways, we actually reward bad behavior. So does this story make me want to venture out for a show at the Catalyst? Will I get shot in the head while I'm waiting in line outside? I also saw an article this week from KPIX, which is the San Francisco-based CBS affiliate, talking about how Santa Cruz can't kick anyone out of Camp Bernal. New law limits authorities' options in Santa Cruz homeless camp cleanup, says the headline. We can't actually tell them to leave, this is a quote, said Santa Cruz Community Relations Specialist Eileen Cross. Quote, it's against the law now, unquote. What a load of crap from some junior city spokesperson here. Where's the quote from city manager and camp namesake Martine Bernal? Or Chris Croon, or Martine Watkins. Can I get a Sweetie Muffintop? Nah, you can have Eileen Cross selling us a typical full of crap line from the city. Here, swallow this. Now be quiet. We're doing the best we can. It's not good enough. How does the city manager manage to retain his job here? It's like the one thing he's actually good at, keeping his job. I'll talk more about it later this week. And now, here's a bit of local music info for the week. And don't forget, support your local musicians, folks.
Welcome to the Entertainment Report for January 27th. On Monday, January 28th at the Rio Theater, we have Jake Shimabukuro, ukulele extraordinaire. Tuesday, the 29th at Moe's Alley, the Gladiators reggae show, starting at 8 p.m. Wednesday, at the Reef Pono, we have Paige Brownton and Alastrae. Paige Brownton is one of the early members of the San Francisco music scene going back to the early 60s. Moe's Alley has Front Country, outstanding band. They're at 8:30. The Kwumba on Thursday, the 31st. The Hot Club of San Francisco. Coconut Grove has Richard Thompson with his electric trio. This is a five-star show. Check this out. Friday, February the 1st, at the Pono Hawaiian Grill, we had John David Pomacayo and Andre Pule at 6:30. Hawaiians, this is the scene. Saturday, February the 2nd, Michael Gaither and his new best friend's full band will be down at Jensen Music in Aptos, 7:30. Sunday, and every Sunday for free, are the Grateful Sundays at Michael's on Main. Starts at 5:30. And I'm going a little bit outside the normal window. Advance notice for the Catalyst on February the 9th, Saturday, is The Green. This is one of the premier island reggae good time bands. 8 p.m. If you have an event or a show you would like us to consider featuring, email at entertainment@santamierda.com. And we'll try to get it on here for you. That's it, folks.
So that wraps up this week's Unfiltered podcast. Don't forget to check out the Weekly Dump, published each week over on santamierda.com. And we've got all the Unfiltered podcasts archived over on SoundCloud. So go have a listen if you've missed anything. Tune in next week for more news and views about Santa Cruz. And remember, you get what you're willing to tolerate. Adios, amigos.
It's making me nervous, yeah.